Our gospel today began with these words, "Great crowds were traveling with him." If we were to look at the whole of chapter 14 of St. Luke's gospel, we would notice how abruptly the scene changed from where we were last week. Remember last Sunday's gospel, we found ourselves with Jesus at a dinner at the home of one of the leading Pharisees. But today we're back outside, on the road again, where the crowd is following Jesus as he is journeying towards Jerusalem. So what was the crowd thinking as they followed him? They do seem to be enthusiastic, but we need to ask ourselves, were they really expecting Jesus when Jesus arrived at Jerusalem? What were they really looking to happen there? Maybe their enthusiasm suggests that they were seeing themselves on a victory march to Jerusalem along with Jesus, whom in some sense they regarded as a hero, as their hero. But there's also another dimension to consider in today's gospel. Scholars tell us that there was likely just a little bit, if not a lot, of jealousy between Galilee and Judea. That is, between the poor and the less refined Galileans and the more affluent and sophisticated people of Jerusalem. Very likely many of those following Jesus that day were Galileans who saw Jesus as leading the charge on behalf of the poor against the powerful and the wealthy. Of course, they would have regarded him as, in some sense, the Messiah. If he was the Messiah as they understood that word, he would then be driving out the Romans. The Galileans and those disciples from Judea would have been on the same page in that regard. So most likely many, if not all, were pinning all of their various personal hopes on Jesus. So, the point of today's gospel is that Jesus had to alert this crowd about what to expect. He had somehow to get them to change from their grand and glorious ideas to the reality of what will actually happen. That task is the real reason for the parables he uses today. They had to be told to consider what they would do if they decided to stay with him all the way. And so he began with this statement, "Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." Just imagine what the crowd thought of this statement. But then he goes on to state, "If anyone comes to me without hating his father and mother, wife, children, brothers and sisters, and even his own life, cannot be my disciple." But what about that expression, hating father and mother? How does that fit with what we know about his call to love the neighbor? This seems to contradict what we find in the first letter to Timothy, where St. Paul writes this, "And whoever does not provide for relatives, especially family members, have denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." I think we need to realize that Jesus is not using the word hate as we use the word. It was different in ancient Hebrew. The sense of hate really meant to turn away from or detach oneself from. But what does it mean here in terms of discipleship? Well, we all live in a web of relationships which arise out of certain loyalties. But what's happening here is Jesus is saying that our relationship with him must take first place over all other relationships. In fact, our relationship with Jesus is supposed to redefine all of our other relationships, including the ones with our family members. And so, are we willing to allow our relationship with Jesus redefine all of our human relationships? The real question is, are we ready and willing to pay the price of true discipleship, just like that farmer building a watchtower in his field? Jesus said, which of you, wishing to construct a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if there's enough for the completion? So did the farmer check out whether he had the wherewithal to complete it? Did he have the resources available to build that tower? And if he did not and started to build it, well, then he would look foolish. I'm reminded of a structure you see on the west coast of Scotland in the town of Oban that was built during the time of the Depression. A banker thought he would help employment by causing this thing to be built. It didn't get very far. It's now known as McCaig's Folly. And now with even more consequences, what about the parable of the king who's on his way to do battle with another king? He should not go forward unless he is sure he has the resources, the manpower, to devote to such a battle. These parables might be coming at a special time for RCIA, now known as OCIA. Perhaps they can remind those who are thinking about entering the church to not just look at the pleasant and happy side of becoming a Catholic, but also to look at all the imperfect parts. For not all Catholics are perfect people. We know, don't we? Present company accepted, though. And not all are pleasant people. And priests are human beings with faults, as well we know. And finally, there are those new rules and customs to observe after entering the church, and so on. When the gospel ended today with these words, "Salt is good, but if salt loses its taste, with what can its flavor be restored? It's fit neither to be for the soil nor for the manure pile," he says. "It's thrown out. Whoever has ears to hear ought to hear." The enthusiasm of the beginner is like that salt which is good, but then with the passing of time loses its sharpness, its flavor. What will happen to the enthusiasm of those who are following Jesus when he gets to Jerusalem? And the reality of what happens there sets in and impacts these disciples. We here today know what happened. Remember, they all left him at the Garden of Gethsemane. For us, the salt of our own enthusiasm can lose flavor in the face of struggles and the pressures of life. We can forget our Christian values when things don't go our way. However, we can regain our strength by a recommitment to Christ. And so our Sunday celebration of the Eucharist right now is a time for such a renewal and refreshment. But the real question is, are we allowing ourselves to be vulnerable to Jesus in order for it to work in us? Being vulnerable to Jesus will enable us to enter more fully into the mystery of this Eucharist we're about to celebrate. This Eucharist, which is really entering into the mystery of his passion and death and resurrection, whereby we are saved.